Mitchell Fox Reel 3. Could you tell me in as much detail as you can remember the quality and type and amount of food you got when you were a prisoner of war?
Yes, the quality of the food was extremely poor and very meagre, inasmuch as the Germans at that period of the war had very little of their own. The most of the good food, of course, went up the line to the soldiers. And what we found at home, particularly in the towns that I was a prisoner, was the minimal. It was about one meal a day, which consisted of a piece of black bread about half the size of the palm of your hand, which was a whole day's ration of bread, and that was black, a sort of rye bread. The main meal would be something like a plate of sauerkraut, as you know, as sour cabbage. Another day it might be a sort of liquid cheese. But I don't think there was anything much in the way of variation. It always seemed to be more or less the same thing. And then there was a cup of this so-called coffee.
Now, in your period as a prisoner of war, you spent by far the largest amount of time at Mainz.
Yes.
In fact, you were there for more than 6 months.
Yes.
Where was the prisoner of war camp in Mainz, and what was it like?
The prisoner of war camp in Mainz was known as the Citadel, and it was obviously the barracks, military barracks. And it was very well set up, very well built edifice. It already had rooms, it already had huts. It already had all the equipment you'd expect to see in fairly modern barracks, you see. Very clean indeed. You never saw any litter in the place. It was well looked after, and the officers there were very nice.
With a name like the Citadel, it sounds rather like a castle.
It
Was it?
wasn't, no, it wasn't a castle. It was a military barracks.
Yeah. Well, did it have any sort of fortifications, walls, and things like this?
There was a very high wall indeed, surrounding it, and the other side of it there was a moat, which made it difficult to get out of.
Yes. Tell me about the daily routine at Mainz, starting at the beginning of the day. How would you spend
Well,
the day, the
when
normal routine?
the normal routine, you woke in the morning and you shaved and dressed as best you could, and there was a roll call on the quadrangle. And each of the Stube, our rooms in which we lived, had an officer attached to that particular room who was responsible for that particular room. And your name was called out, and you were marked down as present or absent, as the case may be. If you were absent, of course, you might have been sick, but you, at any rate, you were at the roll call. At the end of the roll call, that was that. And as far as the Germans were concerned, there was nothing more to do or to say, except when you had a bit of luck, you perhaps got a bit of post from England, which seemed like a long time coming.
Well, another feature of the normal routine of the day must have been the meal, which they had
Well,
to
the meal was
order.
about 12, from 12 to 1 o'clock noon, and then we had the same sort of repetition of something in the form of, well, a vegetable soup or a sauerkraut, a similar sort of thing, and the things I mentioned before, and the usual coffee and piece of black bread.
So you were largely left to your own devices once roll call had
Yes,
finished.
yes.
Let's talk about your own devices, the kind of things you did. One that you mentioned to me earlier was that the prisoner of war camp started its own theatre group. Who were the leading figures in that, and what kind of things did you do?
Yes. I wonder if I could go back again to one moment regard to the food, could I?
Sure.
Well, it was simply this, to give you some idea of the effect on, it is something I haven't meant before, but the effect of the lack of food, malnutrition and so on, meant a considerable loss of body weight in the majority, in all, I should say, of the prisoners who were there. And to give you an indication of how weak one became, there was a flight of stairs, not very steep stairs, up to my particular bedroom. And after a while, I could negotiate the first two steps standing upright. The remainder of the stairs I had to do on my hands and knees because I hadn't got the strength to walk upright up the stairs. On the level I was all right. On the stairs I couldn't negotiate except the first two. That was a little idea. Now, can I come round to the period when they insisted on vaccination?
Go ahead.
Now, in this case, I can't tell you exactly when it was, but after a period of time, the Germans decided everybody should be vaccinated. Well, most of the people who were there, most of the officers concerned, oh yes, I've had it before, we all have had it before, you had to be vaccinated when you're in your service before you go abroad. Now, bearing in mind that in the majority of cases these officers and men were in a very weak state physically, they were very low in the matter of nutrition. And the result was, those who had been vaccinated, there was a tremendous lot of sickness and a number of deaths, which some people attributed to the vaccine itself. But I think with the combination of circumstances, the lack of resistance and good health, I can't tell anything about the vaccine. But at any rate, a number of people died. And there was one particular fellow, and his name was Captain Ribble. His father was Sir Francis Ribble, who was a well-known journalist before the First World War. And this fellow was a man about 6'4", an awfully nice man, and he'd gone straight from Eton into the services and became a captain. And when he was taken prisoner, he went to Karlsruhe. In Karlsruhe, he joined us at Mainz. The morning when he was vaccinated, news came through that he had been awarded the Victoria Cross. This Captain Ribble, young fellow. We had a celebration that particular evening, that particular night, and of course the only way we could celebrate was with some Rhine wine, some hock. That was another thing we could get at the canteen, and it cost a lot of money. However, we had a little sort of party and congratulated him. The following day he was dead after his vaccination.
Mm. Yeah, I see the problem. going back then to the Camps Theatre Group, did it have a name?
There was a theatre, which had obviously been used by the soldiers who occupied it before the German soldiers. And we were allotted this by the courtesy of the Germans concerned when we notified them that we were going to do some amateur dramatic work. We were going to have concert parties. Oh, yes, that was all right. In our midst, we had the good fortune to have one or two people who were of the theatre life. Maurice Besley, who was a well-known musical composer in London, and Jim Milton Hayes, who was also well-known on the stage as the monologue merchant, I think he called himself. And these people between them, first of all, started off with a musical comedy little company, and people were invited to join. And those who had any talent at all were chosen from the ruck, and a very nice show was put on called The Girl of the Stairs. You'll see how the girl on the stairs. Milton Hayes separated from Besley and started his own little comedy, the name of which I don't recall at the moment, you see.
Was this the Mind Springs?
No, the Mind Springs was the musical one by Besley, Maurice Besley. Milton Hayes didn't call his group anything because he decided to show how good he was at not only preparing and producing and doing the whole thing by himself, but decided that he would not ask for people with talent, but would have anybody who was willing to perform, and he would teach us, which he did. And the name of the thing has come back to me was Mamselle Fenella. That was the name of the concert party, which was a great success. Tremendous success.
These comedies that you performed there, were they original works or were they?
Oh yes,
they were
written and produced in the camp. Mm-hmm. Written and produced by the camp, by the people concerned.
Yeah. Now, another of the things which I know occupied a good deal of your time was the organisation of lecture courses.
Oh yes.
How were they set up, and what were the courses about?
Well, it was decided that we must occupy our time, you see, in addition to the other things we already started, by having keeping our brains in good functioning order, and therefore it was decided to have an educational course, which had a curriculum of languages, philosophy, lectures on religion, lectures on medical matters such as anatomy, physiology, and things of that kind. And I believe there was music. I'm not quite certain about that. I think there was. And we had among us, we had people who could put those subjects over. We had a man from the Argentine who could teach Spanish. We had one or two Roman Catholic priests who could teach Latin and Greek. We had a lecturer from Oxford, Hopkins, I think his name was, who could teach philosophy, and so on. And the result is these courses were very, very popular. Of course, Some of them always fall by the wayside. People get a little bit fed up and a bit bored, prefer their own devices to keeping up with whatever they were trying to learn. But in the main, they were most successful, and they helped to pass away the hours and the time in our spare time.
Your attention during this period as a prisoner of war must have been drawn to the possibilities of escape. Was that set up in any organized kind of way?
Oh, yes, indeed. Everything. No one ever tried to escape, except one, without a consultation with a certain colonel who was in charge of our escape club. And the whole thing was organized by him and his little committee of escapees. And it was all arranged that you or someone else was willing to undertake getting through the wire. And we arranged that the whole camp should come to your aid. And it did so by arranging various attractions and distractions of the German sentries, of the men in the order room and at the windows and so on, by putting on the occasional boxing contest, a football match, a certain Major Keatings, I can see him now, who raced down outside to the order room and fell flat on his face with a basket of biscuits, you see, having the sentries going into hysterics, laughing and watching him picking up all these biscuits and scratching his head at his folly. And all these things helped to distract the German staff in general. And in the meantime, even in broad daylight, some would be cutting the wire, and under the cover of a few bodies, someone got away through the wire and disappeared for the rest of the day.
Did the methods of escape vary much?
Not a great deal.
What was the method?
Well, the method was that we should arrange for the cutting of the wire, and someone should disappear. At night, we even, shall we say, tied some blankets together and created a rope for someone to slide down the rope. But as I said before, the place had a high wall outside, and no one ever got very far out of the citadel.
No one at all?
No one at all. One man did.
How did he do it?
Well, he jumped into the laundry van when it came in one day when the driver was occupied, and buried himself under a heap of dirty linen and so on. And he did get out of the gates. But when they came to, well, open up the van, he was discovered and back. He didn't come back. He was, like all people who tried to escape, were sent elsewhere. We never saw them again.
Mm-hmm. During this period you were at Mainz, what sort of information were you getting about the state of the war?
Only that which the Germans allowed us to have by means of German newspapers. And everything was all hunky-dory for them, and very poor for us.
Mm-hmm.
You see? The papers were full of propaganda for the good of the German populace.
Mm. Now, one knows that at this period, with the growing severity of conditions in Germany, that there was a good deal of unrest both amongst the civilians and amongst the soldiers. Did you see any of this at the prisoner of war camp at
Mainz?
Yes.
Some of the populace used to come to the windows where we could see them in the street and wave to us and say things to us. And towards the end of our imprisonment, you see, as long as you gave your word of parole that you would not try to escape, you were allowed out of the citadel to go for a walk. And the kids in the street would walk alongside holding our hands and whisper to us, "Kaiser kaput." You see? And we were very friendly and very nice. And by this same time, we were beginning to get some Red Cross parcels of food, mainly large biscuits through. And we used to slip these kids some packets of biscuits and whatever we could spare. And ultimately, you see, we used to get into the camp as a result of this. Civilian clothes, cap, trousers, civilian things, you see, for those who were going to try and escape. After we'd given our word, we wouldn't when we were out, but when we got back. Mm. So we stored up quite a bit of civilian gear and stuff for escaping. The escaping couldn't be in the ordinary way attempted while we were in such a poor state of health, but with the arrival of parcels from Holland, they came via Holland, we were then able to build up a stamina a bit, and we got a little bit stronger and tougher and much more determined to go off.
What about amongst the soldiers themselves? Were there any signs of the sort of unrest that was developing in Germany at this period?
Indeed there was.
Mm-hmm.
Towards the end of things...
This would be the autumn?
Yes, getting towards the end, you see, the German soldiers were obviously disgruntled about the way things were going, about the state of things at home. I suppose they did letters from their wives and so on, families. And ultimately it broke out in... We saw the German officers in civilian clothes for the first time coming to the various and respective duties in the camp, coming in minus uniform. And of course the rumour got around and with a little bit of questioning here and there, we found out that the German soldiers had taken over the army. And they formed soldiers' councils. And they ran everything from then on. The result is they were so preoccupied with their own affairs, they didn't have the time to look after us as well as they might have done.
Did that lead to any interesting opportunities?
And that gave us the opportunity of skedaddling out of the main gate when it was wide open one night, about 100 of us. And we got away just before the end of the war.
You just walked out?
We walked out. No one tried to stop us.
To describe your adventure from then on in as much detail as you can remember.
Well, what happened was this. We grabbed the Dutch barge on the Rhine, and we proceeded down the Rhine slowly, very slowly indeed, stopping at places from time to time, keeping under cover most of the way during the daylight and only appearing for a breath of air in the evening so we wouldn't be spotted. And that was the routine day by day until we ultimately found our way into Cologne. And having got to Cologne, some were spotted British soldiers in British uniform and officers in British uniform. And we thought, hello, what the heck's this? And finding out, we found out that the war was over. And that was that.
Finally, could you tell me what sort of conditions were like in Cologne at this period in 1918?
My experience of Germany in general throughout the time I was there was of the extreme cleanliness everywhere. Every square inch of the countryside was cultivated. There was never any litter. Cologne was a particularly clean city. The people walking about in it were, shall we say, of the higher class types, obviously, who had a certain amount of means of their own. And when we did approach the largest hotel in the city... Okay.